Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com. From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech, technology worth talking about. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and approachable for you.
Got a question about your computer, smartphone, tablet, or the internet? Give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com.
Well, the turkey is all gone and the pie is all gone. Oh. It's the week after Thanksgiving. Tom, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was pretty good. My dad and I visited some friends in Riverside who lived in basically a penthouse suite way up with an amazing view of the river and an amazing view of Riverside. You know, it's funny because Jacksonville is so flat that you don't usually get to see the aerial view of your neighborhood. So
that's true. Everything seems to be built on the first floor here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, exactly. So that was cool, you know, eating turkey and looking out over the St. John's River.
Okay. Did you manage to get any Black Friday or Black Thursday shopping in?
I ordered some RAM off Amazon.com. That's about as crazy as I got.
All right, that's cool.
Hey, Shauna, back there in the sound booth, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. This is actually the first time I've ever been on the show. This is it was good. I went out of town and I did some Black Friday shopping as well, but online as well.
So yeah, smart man.
Wasn't that exciting?
Yeah, you were saying that something happened though with your girlfriend when you dropped her off.
Yeah, she had to work Friday morning at 5 o'clock.
Oh wow!
So I, as a sign of solidarity, I took her to work.
That was nice.
Since I didn't have to work, dropped her off, and I figured while I was out at this big outdoor mall that we have here in Jacksonville, that I would stop by Best Buy, Toys R Us, some of the other stores that were open.
Yeah, and how are the lines doing?
I was surprised to find that basically no one was there at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
It was a little bit busier over at Target when I went there, but still not huge crowds or anything.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah, I think people are less crazy than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
So, how was your Thanksgiving, Ray?
Well, this year, we did something a little different. We didn't spend any time with the family.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Just kidding. my
grandma was actually down in Orlando with her sister, so we didn't have her come over. And we went to Cracker Barrel, of all places.
Really?
Yeah, it was really nice. We got tons of food. Everything you could want, turkey and ham. And this is not a commercial for Cracker Barrel, but it was really great. It was super, super cheap. And just an absolute ton of food. This amazing pecan crusted pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm.
It was so yummy. And the nice part was there's no cleanup, no dishes.
Yeah.
But Friday morning, I realized there's also a sad part. No leftovers.
Oh.
Yeah. So we decided that next year, if we do it again, we are definitely going to order an extra plate and take it to go.
Yeah, you gotta have those leftovers.
That was the only sad part.
All right, so your wife, Amber, did a bunch of research into Black Friday deals for us last week. Did you get roped into heading out to the stores Thursday night or Friday morning?
Oh, yeah, I sure did. It was my first Black Friday ever. Actually, I guess it was Black Thursday. Yeah, so I recorded it, and it sounded like this. Just kidding. Actually, it was a lot more civil than that, surprisingly, although I'll be honest with you, I was a little nervous.
Yeah.
Going in there. It was my first time. I had never done it before. My wife and my mother-in-law are like veterans. They do this every year.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that 1 terabyte Toshiba external hard drive I was telling you about last week?
The one at Walmart for like $59.
Yeah, that one. At 10 o'clock is when they opened it. So there I was standing at the display or trying to get to the display at 9 o'clock. And interestingly, when I found the display, first off, I called my wife and I was like, okay, I have no idea what I'm doing. Where am I going? She's like, just look for the display, go to the display and stand there. So, of course, I go to electronics like a man, you know,
uh-huh.
I'm looking for something that's going to be in the department that it belongs in. Oh, no. It's in the grocery department.
Really?
Yeah. So they're like, oh, yeah, all the electronics are in the grocery department. Oh, that makes perfect sense. Thank you, sir.
Were all the groceries in the electronics department?
No, no, no. The groceries were still in the grocery department.
Oh, okay.
But all the big displays for the doorbuster sales. But there was no door busting happening. They're open 24 hours. So when I finally found the display, there were three big, how should I put this? Well, redneck dudes standing in front of the display.
Nice.
Nice gentlemen. But they were about 3 inches taller than me, 3 to 5 inches, and I'm about 6 foot. Really big guys. So I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And everything was wrapped in cellophane, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my brother-in-law were there, and he's 15. And I was kind of like just talking about, oh, yeah, all the craziness on Black Friday. And I had said in a pretty loud voice, nothing in this store is worth fighting over. And a couple of the guys look at me and like, yeah, that's true. And actually, the funniest thing was 10 minutes before the sale began, this 10-year-old girl, skinny as a rail, I had my hand on my hip at the time, and she sticks her head through my arm and sneaks right up in front of us, you know, a foot from the display, and just stands there. And we're all like, well, that's funny, you know? And she looks at all four of us and goes, what are you guys looking at? And actually, we joked that, we could throw you from here. And she goes, well, my dad's back there. And we turn around, there's no dad anywhere in sight. And like, smart kid. But
she wanted her terabyte hard drive.
Yeah, she did. She was fierce about it. She was willing to fight for it. But then, right after she did that, the manager gets on the intercom and lets everyone know, the sale starting at 10 p.m. or will be one per customer. And like, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So some people started getting irritated at that. But most people were cool with it. You're like, yeah. Like, I actually went for three, but it was only me and my brother-in-law, so we were only going to get two. So I was like, yeah, okay, fine. But there was one lady who said she had been there for 4 hours, and she was going to get four of whatever it was that she was getting. She was on the other side of the display. And the guy who was managing this situation, he wasn't having any of that. He was like, ma'am, listen. The manager says one per customer. We're giving away one per. We're selling you one per customer. She starts yelling, blah, blah, blah. So he goes, ma'am, no problem. I understand. But this is how we're going to do it. And that police officer right over there will be glad to escort you out of here in handcuffs, as that's going to be a problem. Now, are you going to be happy with only getting one of these tonight? Okay, then. Thanks for understanding.
Awesome.
He really took control of the situation. And it was actually really cool how they handled it. He just cut the cellophane, reached in and grabbed it and handed it to us one by one. So, and then after all the insanity was over, then they took all the cellophane off and they were sitting there. Now, the one thing I was kind of irritated was that there were only 24 of the 1 terabyte hard drives on display and there were a handful of the 750 gigabyte for $10 less. And I walked by the display later and there was only one left. But most, of course, of the 750 gigabytes were still there. So, but we did end up getting three of the hard drives.
Nice.
So, yeah, we worked that out.
Nice.
this is terrible. I probably shouldn't admit to this. But what we did is my brother-in-law bought one, went out to the store, put it in the car, or out of the store and put it in the car, came back in, and then we bought two more. So, technically, that's not breaking the rules, right?
Yeah. Ray, we got to talk about your cheating problems.
I feel better. Well, let's see. We got an email from a listener from last week,
we
actually.
Get emails?
Yeah, we got an email. It's from Bill from Orange Park. He said, last week, you guys said that anyone with a smartphone can send their contact info to anyone else with a smartphone. What were you guys talking about, and how do you do it?
Wow, check it out. It's an actual listener, somebody who really listens to our show.
Wait, why would anybody do that? He must have been listening to something else and just got confused and called us.
No, he must have been listening to our show because he mentioned something we talked about last week.
Oh, that's right. So you'll have to remind me what we talked about last week, because I can barely remember what we're supposed to be talking about this week.
Oh, last week we talked about some business card scanner apps.
Oh, right. I do remember that.
And you said that somebody with a smartphone can transfer their business card to someone else over a text message. So do you remember how to do that?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Okay, what?
Okay, why don't you tell Bill how to do that?
Tell Bill how to do what?
How to transfer a business card via text message. Why don't you tell Bill how to transfer a business card via a text message.
Okay, Tom, calm down. No need to get feisty. All you had to do was ask.
Yeesh.
Okay, well, each phone works differently, but on almost all phones that support the feature, you just open the Contacts app and then tap on the name of the contact that you want to share, then tap something like Share or Share Contact. Then you'll usually get options like email, Bluetooth, or message. Pick the method that you want to use to send it, and then send it. When the other person gets the message, they can choose to save the contact in their contact list.
Yep. Almost all feature phones or dumb phones or smartphones, whatever, support this feature. And on Android, some phones have this ability built in. All you have to do is tap the contact and tap share. That's the way it is on my Samsung Galaxy S3.
Yep.
And then you can send the contact via SMS, Bluetooth, or email. However, some older Android phones, you have to download a third-party app. Yeah. A good one to use is called Share Contacts, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yep. Same thing is true on Windows phones. I know that Nokias have the feature built in, but others, you have to download an app for it. Fortunately, you don't have to be using the same kind of phone for this to work. A lot of times, you know, you can only share from a Samsung to a Samsung. Like, you've got the great tap to share feature.
Yes, which I have yet to ever use. But let's move on.
Same thing with iPhone. You can do iMessage back and forth. But this, it works regardless of what phone you're using it from or to. So you can transfer a contact from an iPhone to an Android phone, or from an Android phone to a dumb phone, or a dumb phone to an iPhone. Because they all use the same format, which is a VCF file.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, nothing is as good as a good old-fashioned piece of hard paper. There's something about that, you know, being able to give something to someone to hold in their hand. It's as if you're giving a little piece of yourself to them. It's a, you know, tangible reminder of a meeting. And that can be much more effective than an entry in their contact list that will most likely disappear into their phone, never to be seen again. Even if they think it's cool that you were able to magically add your contact information to your phone. But there is one way you can impress them and still give them a real business card. When they hand you their business card, pull out your phone and use one of those apps we talked about, like ABBYY's Business Card Reader or Yolu, to snap a picture of the card and put the contact info into your phone. And then, you know, they can hand it to you, and you can hand it back to them and say, here, I got it. I've already stored it in my phone.
There you go.
And either way, you know, that'll impress them with your technical prowess and leave a lasting impression.
That's right.
All right, well, we have to take a quick break. While we do that, if you're listening to the show on our website, do us a favor. Click on the iTunes link and subscribe to the show in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. If you've already subscribed, take a second and leave us a review on iTunes. The more subscribers we have and reviews we get, the higher we'll get ranked in iTunes, so we'll get even more listeners. You're listening to Deemable Tech.
I'm Tom Brown. I'm Ray Hollister. I'm Tom Brown. I'm Ray Hollister. And this is Deemable Tech. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and affordable for you. I'm Tom Brown. Give us a call at 904. I'm Ray Hollister. E-E-E-F 904-372-3336. Technology worth talking about. And this is Deemable Tech. Joined, of course, by my co-host, Tom Brown. I'm Tom Brown, joined, of course, by my co-host, Ray Hollister. And this is Deemable Tech. I'm Ray Hollister. I'm Tom Brown. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and approachable for you. Technology worth talking about.
Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Ray Hollister, joined, of course, by my co-host, Tom Brown.
Yeah, and our last question was about last week's episode, and speaking of that, we had a question from Carson that we weren't really able to finish answering because we ran out of time, so let's answer it today. What Carson wrote was, usually when I need a file to share with a friend, I just email it to them, but the other day I had a video file I wanted to share, and it was too big to email. I thought of putting it on my thumb drive, but I couldn't find the darn thing. I wound up burning the file onto a CD, but that was slow and seemed like a waste of good CD. Do you guys have any ideas about easier ways to share large files?
Yeah, so last week we joked that there are tons of ways to share files now, and it's true. So which way works the best depends on how big the file is. Is it small or is it large? Is it huge?
Right. If it's under 5 megabytes, you shouldn't have a problem sending it just by email. If it's under a gigabyte, you can probably put it on your phone or your tablet or whatever, anything that has an SD drive. as long as you have a USB cable, of course, to plug in your computer. Same thing is true of e-readers, MP3 players, and whatever. As long as you've got that cable, basically they act as thumb drives, USB drives, and you can move them files to other computers.
Right. And as long as you have the cable, and, well, you're close enough to it, then you're fine. But, and this is where we ran out of time last week, what about cases where people need to send files a long distance? You know, sometimes you can't just walk across the room and plug your iPhone into the other computer.
Well, I would suggest the cloud.
The cloud?
The cloud.
Okay. Well, let's back up. Let's explain to our listeners again what the cloud is.
All right. Well, the cloud is really just a fancy way of saying that the files aren't stored on your computer. They're stored on a server or servers out on the internet somewhere.
In Somewheresville.
Yeah, in
USA,
Somewheresville.
Maybe. Or not. Maybe not in the USA.
I think it's in the middle of the desert in Nevada.
Sometimes in North Carolina.
Yeah, okay. at any rate, there's a number of companies and services out there that allow you to upload files to the cloud for free or cheap. And once your file is in the cloud, it can be rained down on any computer or device you need.
Oh, boy.
That's the best I could come up with on short notice. Sorry.
No sad trombone there. Sorry, we could have got it in there. Well, one service that offers a couple of gigs of free space is Dropbox. And we've talked about them before. Mm-hmm. If you have a Dropbox account, you can upload files to your public folder, and then they have a unique web address. And you can send those web addresses to whoever you like, and they can download the file themselves. Similarly, Google Drive will give you 5 gigabytes of free storage. So if it's, you know, more than 2 gigs and you need that extra space, you know, there's Google Drive you could use. And Microsoft SkyDrive gives you a whopping 7 gigabytes of storage just for signing up for an account with their new Outlook.com.
Right, like Elizabeth Pamplone talked about when we had her on the show the other week.
Yep.
Let's not forget that if the person you're trying to share with is a contact on Skype or many other instant messaging services, you can transfer a file to them directly during a chat session. It's not always the fastest method, but it's a good solution for small to medium-sized files.
Yeah.
And speaking of file size, you can always attempt to make that file smaller.
Smaller?
Yes.
How do you do that?
On Windows PCs, you can right-click on any file or folder, and then under the Send To option on the menu that pops up, you'll actually see another option that says Compressed Zipped Folder. Mm. So basically, zipping is like if your file were a piece of paper, it would take it and ball it up into a nice little wad, and then you can metaphorically throw it across the room to your neighbor, and he can unwad it.
Right, but some files, of course, compress better than others.
Yes. Music and video files are actually already really compressed just through their nature, so zipping's not going to help you shrink them down that much. And, of course, the file or files will have to be unzipped at the other end, so that person will have to know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's something to keep in mind if you're sending it to, you know, your grandma or someone who isn't that tech savvy. Sometimes if you send them a crazy zip file or a RAR file or a tar file.
An ARJ.
You might confuse them a little bit. So
I've gotten formats and I'm like, what?
And you have to Google it to find out, okay, what do I do with this?
What is a .jzl?
Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind. But, you know, if you do send them instructions on how to unzip it, that could save you some time also. So just want to make sure that we covered that thoroughly, Carson. So thanks for your email, and hopefully that'll help you out. Let's see. We got an email from Marco. Marco writes, Windows Movie Maker is driving me crazy. I thought maybe you can tell me what I'm doing wrong. I'm trying to convert a bunch of my dad's radio programs, into videos so I can put them on YouTube. I don't need much more than a title card and the audio, but Movie Maker is truncating some of the audio files. I import a 7-minute file and it turns into a 4-minute file. Well, that would be frustrating. This isn't true for all the files, just a few random ones. Can you help me? Note, I've also tried iMovie and had similar problems. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, Marco, thanks for the question. What you're doing is a great idea, by the way. People might not realize that you can use YouTube to broadcast, you know, old sound files and stuff like that.
Now, was this Marco's dad's radio show or shows that he had recorded that he wanted to keep?
I believe Marco's dad's, but I don't know if it's a current radio show or something
interesting.
In the past.
Okay.
But yeah, you can upload old sound files. You just have to convert them into quote-unquote movies so YouTube will accept them. And all you need for the video part of the movie is maybe a title card or an album cover if it's a song. There's lots of people storing music and other audio files on YouTube that way these days. We won't get into all the sticky details here, but YouTube has a nice help page explaining how to do this using Windows Movie Maker or iMovie, walks you through it step by step, and we'll link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
But sometimes you hit a bump in the road, like Marco did, which gives us a little chance to talk about MP3s. Ray, have you ever asked yourself the question, what is an MP3?
No, I've never asked that question. But I do remember there was a funny commercial a long time ago when the dad was like, oh, that MP3, I heard it's way better than that MP2. And everyone I knew of who didn't know what MP3 actually stood for, they were like, ha, 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 that's funny. I was like, actually, that's really not funny because there was an MP2.
Yeah.
And there actually still is an MP2.
Yeah.
So explain, what is MP3?
All right. Well, MP3 is short for MPEG-2 Audio Layer 3, which isn't very catchy. And I guess that's why everyone just calls them MP3s. But as you point out, there was an MPEG-2 Audio Layer 2.
And obviously MPEG-1.
And there was an MPEG-1, which actually I think is a video format.
It's still around, yeah.
Yeah. But basically, this is a standard or a format for digitally encoding sound files and compressing them so they aren't huge.
Right.
Now, something to note is that MP3 files use what's called lossy compression.
Okay.
Lossy is a sort of silly way of saying that it loses something when you compress it. Basically, the idea is that it can throw away some small, unimportant bits of sound in the file that the human ear is not really going to notice to save space.
Okay.
Files have been... The trick with this is every time you do this process, every time you convert to MP3, like, it loses a little more of the sound quality. Mm. Interesting historical note, the first song ever converted to an MP3 was Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega.
I knew that because Suzanne Vega was also the first artist to perform virtually in Second Life.
Wow, I did not know that.
She made the jump also from... into the virtual world.
Oh, she really embraced
the first digital artist.
Well, Karlheinz Brandenburg was testing the MP3 compression algorithm, and he wanted to use that song because he wanted to make sure that his algorithm could, while compressing, you know, the sound file, still capture the warmth and subtlety of her voice. So he picked that song to test against.
Interesting.
The important thing is an MP3 is not an exact duplicate of the original audio source. Small errors can creep in because it's a lossy format. Usually they're inaudible to the human ear, but not always.
Okay, well, all that was interesting information. But what does this have to do with Marco's problem?
Well, knowing how MP3s work and might give us a clue to what's going on here. Some problems are going to happily ignore those small errors in an MP3 file, and they're going to play right through them. Mm-hmm. Usually iTunes is pretty good about that and other similar, you know, music playing playback programs. But other programs are less forgiving, especially if they have to convert that MP3 into another format, like, for instance, a video format.
Oh, okay.
Like Windows Movie Maker is going to have to. So it's possible that Marco's MP3 players have some small errors that Windows Movie Maker is picking up on.
The MP3 files, you mean?
Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
Okay.
So, but before we jump to that conclusion, Marco, be sure to check the most obvious problem and make sure that your MP3s really are not truncated.
Oh.
Try playing them in iTunes or Windows Media Player or whatever you usually use, and make sure that they play all the way to the end, because otherwise, there's your problem.
Yeah, it could even say that it's a 3-minute or a 7-minute file, but it really is a 3-minute file.
Yeah, sometimes the time listed on the file is wrong, and that's very good indicator that you've got a little bit of file corruption going on there.
So, assuming that it's not truncated, what would you do then?
I would suggest trying to convert your MP3 files to WAV files. That's WAV.
Okay, and a WAV file is?
They're raw, uncompressed audio files. They literally capture the sound wave of the audio, thus the name WAV. There's not much that can go wrong with a WAV file. I mean, it's not compressed. It's just the raw sound.
Okay, and then that actually answers the question, then why, of course, wouldn't we just use WAV instead of MP3s?
Right. Well, I mean, because WAV files are uncompressed, that means they're really, really big. So you can have a 3-megabyte MP3 file, and the WAV version could be 20 megabytes.
Right. Whereas our show, for instance, on WAV file is about 0.5 gig, and the MP3 is only about 40 megs.
Right.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. But space is cheap, and from the sound of it, Marco, you only have a few files you need to convert like this anyways. You're going to need a program to convert the file. There are a ton of programs that will convert from MP3 to WAV for you. You can actually do it in iTunes. If you go to into your options and select under, I believe, CD ripping, what format you would like to select rip to and set that to WAV, then you right-click on any MP3 player you have, or excuse me, you click on any MP3 file that you want to convert, go up to Advanced, and it will say Convert to WAV. The option you just suggested, and it'll do it that way. There's also a free program called Audacity.
Yeah, that one works like a charm.
Yeah, it's great. It's not always as user-friendly, but it is absolutely free. You can find it out there on the internet, and it converts to all kinds of different data formats, including WAV. You got any others, Ray?
GarageBand obviously would work if you're okay. on the Mac. That should do the trick. Otherwise, there's another one called VLC. That will also convert it, but that is a little bit tricky. It's not exactly user friendly. Okay. I would stick to iTunes or Audacity.
Yeah,
Audacity is a little bit trickier of the two, but iTunes, if it doesn't do the job, Audacity should do the job, and it's free. So
Audacity, all you do is you gotta go to File, import the MP3 file, and then when you go to Export, it'll ask you what format you want to export as, and just select WAV.
So once you got it converted to a WAV file, what do you do with it then?
Well, then you should be good to go, really. First, play it. Make sure it's not truncated. And if it's not, add it to your movie project in Windows Movie Maker. And there you go.
All right. Well, hopefully that should take care of your problem. Well, let's see. We've got a related question from a listener named Calvin. He writes, I have a video interview of my great-grandfather about his experiences in World War II, which I've finally gotten converted to digital. I tried to upload it to YouTube. This took about an hour. But it eventually uploaded successfully. But then, when I tried to watch the video, YouTube says I can't because it's too long. It suggests I break the video down into chunks, but that seems pretty annoying. And why on earth can't YouTube tell me the video is too long before wasting an hour of my time?
I feel your pain, Calvin. And the answer to your second question is that YouTube hates you.
What?
Okay, I'm kidding. It's really because YouTube doesn't know how long your video is going to be until it's been uploaded all the way to their servers and processed.
That makes sense.
But you'd think they would give you some sort of heads up, right? But I have good news. You can upload videos longer than 15 minutes, much longer, in fact. You just need to convince YouTube that you're a real person and not a robot. To do this, you will have to give them the number of a cell phone that can receive text messages.
Okay, so how do you do that?
Go to www.youtube.com/my_videos_upload, okay? And we're going to link to that in the show notes, too. If you're not already logged into YouTube with your own account, do so. And then at the bottom of this page, you should see a box that says upload HD format, HD videos in various formats up to 15 minutes. And beside that, in blue text, it says increase your limit. Click on that blue text. YouTube is then going to ask you for a cell phone number. When you enter one, a new page will appear asking you for a verification number. At the same time, YouTube should have sent you a text message with the number that they are asking for. If you didn't get that number from them via text, go back one page and try sending it again. Once you have that verification number, you just enter it into the box.
Okay, so you get the text message, you enter the verification number into the box. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's the next step?
Next step to what?
Uploading longer videos.
There's no next step. You're done. You can now upload videos that are as long as you want.
Sweet. Let's go get tacos.
All right.
Awesome. So that should take care of your problem there, Calvin. Let's see. We got another one from Joel. Oh, our longtime listener, Joel. Can you grab that?
I will in a minute. I'm having some technical difficulties.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I can read it. Joel asks, I have noticed on iOS on my iPad that I can double-click the home button to open a list of recently opened apps, and from there I can long press the apps and then close them. I know that Android automatically closes apps that aren't being used, but it doesn't look like iOS does. So my question is it beneficial to regularly close the apps in the recently opened tray, or does it matter? Oh, okay. Well, thanks for your question, Joel. That is actually something that a lot of new iPhone and iPad users often wonder, especially if, like you, they're familiar with how other operating systems multitask. Now, Apple's multitasking in iOS works a lot different than other operating systems do. And some would even argue that it's not real multitasking. And for the record, I am one of those people. Even though I'm an Apple fan, I can still criticize them. Now, in iOS, when you close an app, it either goes into background mode or it goes into suspended mode. Only apps that have specific services that are allowed to run in the background will go into background mode and will actually be running when they're not open. Those are primarily location services like GPS or navigation, audio services like music players, and VoIP service, voice over internet protocol services. Mm-hmm. Everything else goes into suspended mode. So while Pandora and Skype and Waze will keep running in the background while you flip to something else, Angry Birds, Netflix, and Keynote will all go into suspended mode. So any program that isn't active or isn't running a background service will be frozen until you switch back to it. The operating system stores the state until you come back to it. Now, that does take up RAM or memory, but not nearly as much as it would if it was running.
Right.
Now, let me explain what that means for the rest of our listeners. Every computer, and a smartphone is nothing but a small computer, works kind of like your office.
Mm-hmm.
A computer has a processor, memory, and storage. In your office, the processor is you, the worker. The smarter you are, faster you are, the faster you can work.
Mm-hmm.
The storage is kind of like your file cabinet. The bigger storage, bigger filing cabinet you have, the more you can store.
Mm-hmm.
And the memory or RAM is like your desk. The larger a desk you have and the more surface space you have on the desk, the more you can do at one time. Also, the more you have out on your desk at one time, the harder it is to do your work. Things start getting messy and jumbled together. And eventually, if you don't start putting things away, you'll run out of room and you won't be able to get anything done.
Okay, but Ray, if every app that closes goes into suspended mode, won't that take up a lot of my memory?
Well, yes, but Apple works that out so that it doesn't cause a problem. iOS automatically prioritizes whatever app is running actively. So if you're using an app that needs a lot of memory, and you have an app in suspended mode that is also using a lot of memory, iOS will automatically close that app out of suspended mode. So even though you still see it when you double tap the home button, in the app switcher, it isn't actually in suspended mode. If you want to, you can see how this works. Open a game like Angry Birds that has a splash screen or a loading page when you open it, but that doesn't load when you switch it from another app. Now, open another app. After it loads the splash screen, switch back to the first one. See how it didn't play the first game's splash screen again? Now, open several other apps and pick some big ones that take up a lot of memory, like Need for Speed and Call of Duty Black Ops Zombie and Mitt Romney's apps, those kinds. Picking on Mitt Romney's app again.
I know. You know, don't kick the man down.
Sorry. His app was big. Anyways, now go back to that first app. You'll see that the splash screen didn't load, did it? That's because iOS had completely closed. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. You'll see the splash screen this time because iOS had completely closed that app because it was running out of memory. So when you went back to it, it loaded up from scratch.
Hmm.
So in answer to your question, no, you don't have to close out apps completely on your iPad. iOS automatically manages your memory so that you don't have to do that. However, if you feel like your iPad is running sluggish, it won't hurt. Just double tap the home button and close everything in the app switcher. Occasionally, you might get an app that is buggy and is making your iPad run slow. Closing it out completely will solve that problem. Also, just like every other computer that has ever been created, if you really want it to get to run faster, turn it completely off and turn it back on. Just hold down that power button until you see the red slider and slide it the right to power off. Then, after the Apple logo disappears, holding down, that's the equivalent of taking everything off the desk, putting it back in the filing cabinet, and wiping your desk down with Pledge and a dust cloth.
Nice.
All right, we have to take another quick break. When we come back, we got more of your questions. This is Deemable Tech.
Hey, this is Al Letson from NPR's State of the Reunion, and right now, you are listening to Deemable Tech. Beam me up, Scotty.
Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Tom Braun, joined, of course, by my co-host, Ray Hollister. And we have another email from Dalmasio. Dalmasio asks, I'm buying a new computer for Christmas, and I want to transfer my files from the old one to the new one. My old PC is a Windows XP desktop. That's pretty old. And my new one is going to be a Windows 8 laptop, and I don't know anything about it. Is there software that will do that for me?
That's a good question, Dalmasio. Thanks. Well, there are a few different ways to move your stuff from your old computer to your new one. So let me start with the easiest.
Yeah.
On Windows 8 and Windows 7, there's a built-in tool called Windows Easy Transfer. And it's pretty much what it does. It's easy, and it lets you transfer your software files from one Windows to another.
Cool.
To use it, first you'll need to download the Windows Easy Transfer software onto your XP computer and install it. And I take personal offense to you insulting his XP computer, because I have an XP computer. Actually, I have two of them.
Oh my gosh.
They're both going to run out of support.
We are a tech show.
It is pretty sad. But I've told you, I've tried Windows 8, and I just don't like it. It's yeah, it
Windows
makes
7
me...
is a very nice operating
Windows
system.
7 is beautiful.
Why are we having this discussion? Dalmasio needs answers.
All right, fine. All right, so once you download the Windows Easy Transfer software onto your XP computer and you have it installed, if you can, plug both of your computers into your router, your internet router, at the same time. Now, of course, I am assuming that you have a router and you have access to the internet. If you don't, you'll have to get a USB transfer cable. And you can find them for anywhere from $5 to $20 online or in most computer or office supply stores. If you don't have a USB transfer cable either, or you don't want to buy one, you can use an external hard drive or a big USB thumb drive as well. It just has to be large enough to hold all of your files from your old computer on it.
Yeah, don't forget about your smartphone tablets, like I mentioned earlier.
That's true. You could use them as well, assuming you have enough extra space on them.
Exactly.
Now that you have either plugged both of your computers into the router or plugged them together with a USB transfer cable or plugged in an external hard drive to your old computer, run the Windows Easy Transfer software on your old computer. Choose either network, easy transfer cable, or USB hard drive, and then follow the on-screen instructions.
Another way to do it, which is a little bit more technical, is to share the hard drive of your old computer on your network. And to share the hard drive of your old computer on your network, you'll open My Computer, and then right-click the hard drive, which is usually C, and select Sharing and Security. That's the tab that will be in the pop-up box. The rest of the instructions are a little too detailed to go into right now, but we're going to include a link in the show notes on how to do it.
Yeah, so, and you'll want to do that, of course, on your Windows XP computer.
Right.
And you'll open them on your Windows 8 computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either way you do it, depending on how much you have on your old computer, it's going to take a very long time to transfer all these files. You'll probably want to start the transfer process before you go to bed and let it run overnight. Once it's finished, you'll have all your documents, files, and photos on your new computer.
Let me interject there real quick, too. After starting that transfer process, check back in 5 to 10 minutes and make sure it's not like hung up on like there's already a copy of this file on this computer. Are you sure you want to continue?
That's
because I've
true.
Done that. I've like been like, oh, I got to let this transfer run for an hour and then come back and it's hung up on that prompt.
That's true.
But what you won't have is all of your programs on your new computer from your old computer.
That's true.
Unfortunately, there's not really an easy way to just migrate all those programs over. You're going to have to manually install any programs that you need from your old computer onto your new computer. And that means you will have to have the installation disks or download the software from the internet.
Right. And of course, you might have issues with Windows XP programs that don't work on Windows 8. And that might be a problem, but it's usually mm-hmm. fairly backwards compatible.
Yeah, there's something called compatibility mode, which I think since XP, almost every Windows has been pretty good about supporting.
Yeah. And we'll include some links in our show notes with some more detailed instructions about that as well. But let's see. We got another email. It's kind of short and sweet. Tom, can you grab that mm-hmm. from Bernard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bernard asks, should I use Excel or Access for keeping track of data?
Okay. And like I said, it's a great question. It depends on what you're doing with the data mm-hmm. and how much data you're working with. Excel is probably the easiest to use for the less computer savvy among us, but spreadsheets are really just for presenting and analyzing data. It's not really designed to store or process data.
That's true.
Now, Excel can be used to sort or filter data to find key values. However, if you spend a lot of time working with lists of data or your lists grow extremely large, you'll probably find Excel to be cumbersome to work with. Now, you should consider using a database instead of a spreadsheet if you're storing multiple types of related information or you need to have multiple people accessing and updating the same information, especially mm-hmm. at the same time, or you need to store hundreds of thousands of records, which is Excel's limit,
mm-hmm.
or you want to use your own data entry form so you can control how the data gets input. Now, here's the thing. The problem that I have recommending using Access, and I use it every day, all the time, mm-hmm. is that Access is a really weak database. If you have a lot of data, or if you have more than 3 to 5 people accessing the database, or if your company really depends on that data, you really shouldn't try using Access to manage it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you've dealt with it as well. It's just not something you want to deal with that much.
It's really, it's a very narrow use case.
Yeah. You need a real solid database like MS SQL or MySQL. It's SQL.
Right.
And you need to hire a database administrator. I've seen a lot of people try to run their own inventory or their payroll on Access. Unless you have a really small business, you're going to outgrow what Access can do pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really designed for, you know, like managing your CD inventory, like one of the classic database examples.
Yeah.
It's like trying to run a moving company out of the back of a Ford Ranger or a Chevy S10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you can do it, but you probably shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that you're asking this question makes me think that you might be in that boat. And so if you know a database administrator, take him or her out to lunch and talk to them about your situation and see what they recommend doing. Because they'll know, you know, what it takes to do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't know one, give us a call and we'll see if we can help you out. Now, we're not database administrators, but we work with database administrators.
And we play database administrators on TV.
Yeah, and we work with databases on a daily basis. So we can probably tell you fairly easily what you need to do. So give us a call. Our number, of course, is 904-372-DEAM. That's 904-372-3336. Leave us a voicemail, and we'll get back in touch with you and see if we can help you work that
out. That's right.
So let's see. We got another email from Ralph. Ralph writes, I'm planning on signing up for high-speed internet. He didn't have high-speed internet before?
No, he was using AOL. He had all those free CDs.
He was that guy that's still on AOL? Wow, okay. No offense, Ralph. Ralph goes on to say, I've heard that I can save money by buying my own modem. Is that true? And is it a good idea? Tom, what do you say?
Hi, Ralph. The answer is yes. Next question.
Oh, okay, great. Well, can we get a more nuanced answer?
All right, fine. Whatever kind of internet access you sign up for, you're going to need a modem. Modem stands actually for something. It stands for modulate, demodulate. And it's basically what it's doing is it's taking the telephone signal or the cable signal that's coming in through the wall, and it's translating that into something that your computer can understand. So it's making it's a translator almost.
Right.
In most cases, you've got a line coming out from the wall, like a coaxial cable or a DSL phone line, and it plugs into the modem. And then you plug your computer into the modem with a Cat5 cable. Or nowadays, more likely, you plug it into a wireless router, and then you can use your laptop, your desktop, and your smartphone with it from anywhere in the house.
Right.
Normally, internet providers try to get you to rent the modem, but in most cases, you don't actually have to. You can go down to your local electronics store and buy a modem. Now, just any old modem won't work. You do need to make sure that you get a modem from an approved list of modems, and your internet provider will provide a list of those modems and buy one of those. You should be able to find the list on their website. If you don't, you know, hold your breath and give tech support a call. A modem can cost up to $125, and that sounds like a lot. But if you're going to pay your internet provider $5 a month for 2 years to rent a modem, you know, it works out to be about the same cost. Except if you bought the modem, then you own it after 2 years, and you don't have to give it back or if you move or change internet providers. And if you keep the same service for more than 2 years, you're saving money. So that's why I would say, you know, you're better off buying a modem in 99% of cases, unless you just plan to be here 6 months and then move out of state or whatever. Generally speaking, having your own modem is a better deal.
Right. Now, not to pick on you too much, but of course, modem, like we were saying before, it does mean modulate, demodulate, which is an old term that actually referred to phone lines, converting an analog signal into a digital signal.
That's true.
And so technically, not to get too nerdy here, modem isn't an appropriate term anymore because we're not converting it from an analog to a digital. It's a digital to a different type of digital.
Mm-hmm.
So not to be too picky there. So you do want to be careful when you're talking to somebody at the store. They might pick on you if you say, I need a modem. They'll be like, well, we don't sell modems anymore.
Yeah, I think they'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they'll probably understand.
I just bought a modem. And as you say, it's a cable modem. So it's not converting anything digital.
Right.
There's no... It's digital cable already, but it does have to have, you do have to have a box that translates, you know, one signal to the other. So your setup is almost always going to be wall to box. That box is the modem.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it could either go to your computer
or a router. Your computer or you know, to the router.
Right. And the router basically acts as, it does two things. It acts as a computer as far as the modem's concerned. The modem sees the router and thinks computer. And then the router also sets up an internal network.
Right. So you can hook up multiple devices to that same internet connection and hook them together to each other.
Yeah, because you have one internet address for your entire internal network as far as the provider is concerned, the cable company.
Right.
But your router allows it to, have multiple addresses for your tablet, your two PCs, your laptop.
Right. And this is kind of like the old days with the phone company. My grandmother, for instance, has a rotary phone,
mm-hmm.
and she has been renting it since the 50s.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
She spends $4 every quarter to AT&T. Of course, it was originally Bell. And all the different companies in between here and then, she still pays it.
It was probably 25 cents back then, too. Or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you figure at $4 a quarter for the past, 60 years,
wow.
quite a bit they've racked up when she could just go down to Walmart and pick one up for $5. But she'd lose that beautiful rotary phone that she has that she could use as a boat anchor. And of course, back then, you had to buy your phone from the phone company.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't
mm-hmm.
have the option of going to the mm-hmm. store. And that's kind of how it works here. With the cable companies, you don't have to buy it from them or rent it from them.
Right. My understanding, and I'm not a liar, is that legally cable companies have to give you the option to buy a modem. Now, with other companies like AT&T UVerse, for example, the situation is a little murkier. They may be able to require that you rent a modem from them. Unfortunately, the only thing you can do about that is to not use that company.
So it looks like you'll definitely save yourself some money if you get the modem yourself, unless your company doesn't allow you to get your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
So your answer is maybe.
Yep. All right. Well, Tom, we got another email from Brett. Can you grab that one?
Brett asks, my ex-boyfriend has been harassing me nonstop via Facebook and now on Gmail. Ooh. It's not to the point where I feel like I should file legal action, but is there any way that I can block him so that he won't be able to send me emails anymore?
Oh, well, let's see. Well, unfortunately, there isn't an easy block button that you can click on Gmail like Facebook has. However, with a bit of creativity, you can accomplish the same thing.
By signing them up for spam? That's what I'd do.
Not exactly. That might be a lot of fun. I don't know how legal that would be. But Gmail actually has filters that you can set up to automatically do something with an email before you even see it. So you can set up a filter that automatically archives an email or deletes it or stars it.
Mm-hmm.
And among other things, automatically replies to an email with a canned response.
Nice.
So you could set up a filter that sends a fake error message like, the message you sent was undeliverable to the following user@gmail.com, user not found. Of course, user would be whatever your email address is. And then it would automatically delete the message. Or you could set it to automatically delete the message. Or if you want to keep the evidence in case, they do something that you want to file legal action about, you can archive it and label it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're really conniving and you just want to irritate them, you can write a canned message that explains exactly what you've done. Like, hey there, you're receiving this message because I set up an automatic filter on my email account. Any emails you send to me are being automatically deleted, and this email will be sent to you every single time you send an email. So here's what you do. Go into your Gmail account, and to set up a filter, click the gear icon on the right-hand side of Gmail. Then click Settings, and then click Filters. On that page, you'll get a link at the bottom that says Create a New Filter. Now, here's the problem. This doesn't stop your ex from trying to email you from a different email address.
Mm.
Just like blocking a phone number on your cell phone only blocks that number, not the actual person that's trying to contact you, the best way to get someone to stop harassing you is just to stop answering them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't respond to it at all. Just ignore it. In that case, that's where the filters will really pay off and just have it automatically archived.
Yeah.
And
that way you don't even have to see it, You don't have to deal with the fact
that it's
coming.
You don't even know that it's happening.
Yep. Just ignore that folder.
Right. And that, of course, is assuming that they're not crazy. If they really are crazy, then they won't run out of energy and they'll just keep bothering you.
And obviously, if things escalate and you feel endangered, you should, talk to the authorities.
Right. And you'll just have to call the cops at some point.
Cyberbullying is not okay, kids.
Exactly. So
what's next?
Well, we have breaking news. We're out of questions.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good time. This is a good time to talk about Deemable Tech podcast, the show. Man, the question we get a lot that we haven't answered really here is, when are you guys going to be on the radio?
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know where you're going with this.
The short answer is we are on the radio right now. I mean, not right now.
That's true. We do have a segment on Morning Edition on WJCT 89.9 FM if you're listening in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Or if you're outside of Jacksonville, you can go to WJCTOnDemand.org and listen to our segments on there.
And hey, if you're feeling really proactive, feel free to call the station right after that and be like, hey, you should get these guys on the air full time. Because that's really what we want to do. People ask us all the time, why are you guys doing this in this format? Why is you have these breaks and that kind of thing. And we're doing it this way because we want to be a WJCT or NPR, format
member
show.
Station, yeah.
Member
yeah,
show.
We use the NPR special programs clock to do our show so that other stations can pick up our show and run with it.
Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think, where we'd love to be. And that's our target audience. Of course, we love, without our podcast listeners and internet supporters, this isn't ever going to get off the ground, so we need you guys.
Absolutely.
But that's sort of the explanation of where we're at right now in terms of, what's the show doing? Are we ever going to be on the air?
Yeah. So. And, of course, at some point we're going to have an app developed to where people can have it a little bit easier to use.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of apps, let's talk about some apps that we've been using this week.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. Man, one that's really been big, actually, personal story. My sister just had a baby, and she lives in Canada. And my mom's been up there, and so, of course, we want to keep in constant contact with each other, but we don't want to pay international rates.
Okay.
So a program we've been using is called Viber, and the reason our family sort of picked Viber is because it's available on both Android and on iPhone.
iOS.
My mom and sister have iOS, and my dad and I have Android phones.
Do you know if it's on Windows Phone?
I do not know that.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a good app. I'll have to check that out. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thanks for all the emails, and keep them coming. That's questions@deemable.com. And call us. Leave us a voicemail at 904-372-3336. And also make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a good review if you enjoyed it. As we always say, even if you didn't enjoy it, still go ahead and leave us a good review. We won't tell anybody. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com. And by A. Edelson LLC, Simple Green Technology Consulting, on the web at aedelson.com. And by Jack's Computer Guys, providing desktop and laptop service for all of Northeast Florida, on the web at jackscomputerguys.com.